Good morning. If you want to turn in your Bibles to the book of Luke, chapter 18, we're going to read a story there in just a moment, Luke chapter 18. And as you're turning there, I'd like to just say a real quick welcome to all of our visitors and everyone that could be here today. That song just said, "Blessed be the name of the Lord. Blessed be your name." And that's why we're here today. We're here to bless his name. We're here to sing praises to him. We're here to study his word, remember the Lord's Supper, and we're just so glad we can all be together to do that as one family, the way God intended that to be. Before I begin the lesson this morning, I mentioned this on Wednesday night, but we always have a few more people on Sunday morning than Wednesday night, so I thought I'd mention this again to get people thinking about it. Starting in March, you know, we're on a two-month quarterly system here starting this year. So starting in March, we're going to start brand new classes, and the downstairs class will be over the book Muscle and a Shovel. A lot of you have read that. A lot of you have expressed interest in a class going over some of the topics in that book. If you would be interested in that class, if you could sign up on the back table and also let us know if you need a book. Some of you already have the book, and that means we won't need to get one for you. But if you want to be in that class and you would like a book, you need the book to be in the class, and we will provide one to you, but we need to know if you need one. So if you could sign up in the back on the back table, and let us know if you need a book or not, that would be great, and that will be starting in March, but we would need to take care of it now so we can order enough books in time for the class to start. So be thinking about that if you want to be part of that class. You know, there was a movie that when I was growing up, whenever it was on TV, I would stop everything I was doing, and this took precedence over anything else or anything else that was on TV. And it was always one of my favorites. It still is one of my favorites. They remade it a couple years ago, which was good, but not as good as the original, I think. And that's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And it was just, you know, as a kid, it was wonderful to see, you know, the factory and everything in it. And it was so colorful and playful. The more I grew up and actually realized the message of the story, it became even more special. Where here you have five kids that won this trip to go tour this chocolate factory that had been closed for years and years and years. And as they go, you know, to each stage of the chocolate factory, they all start dropping off one by one. And if you remember, they all had something that they wanted. They all had something that kind of drove their passion or, you know, all eyes on me for just a second. You had Augustus, which was probably my favorite. Start drinking from the chocolate fountain, and of course what he wanted was just more and more food, more and more candy, and eventually it caught up to him and he fell in and got sucked up the tube. And then you have Violet, who started turning violet because she ate the gum and she didn't listen to what the authoritative figure, Mr. Wonka himself, was saying. You have Veruca, which is my least favorite. We'll come back to her in a minute, that she wanted everything. I want, I want, I want. And she got exactly what she wanted, and she went right down to the trash chute. You have Mikey, who wanted to be on TV and made him about this small, and he was had to be carried away and stretched back into normal size. And then you have Charlie. And Charlie's not so perfect in the movie either, where, you know, he ends up getting the chocolate factory, and we'll maybe come back to this at the end. But Charlie also wanted something. He wanted the fizzy lifting drink, and he was caught, and maybe he thought he could hide it from Mr. Wonka. You know, I think a lot of people today, we want to relate to the good guys. We want to relate to the characters that the movie's named after, or the book is named after. But a lot of us, when I look at that story, when I look at that movie of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I have to say I probably relate more with the four other characters that want what they want. They don't care how they look as long as they get what they want, especially Veruca. She was the girl that didn't care about anything except for what she wanted. The reason she got the trip to the chocolate factory is because she wanted the golden ticket and her father made sure it happened. She wanted the golden goose or the goose that could lay the golden egg, and she didn't care. She wanted it, and as the song goes, I want it and I want it now. And it was almost like all eyes on her. And I have a feeling that a lot of you are like me, where we relate with that character more often than not. Where we love the attention on us. We like people to know the good things we've done. We like people to see maybe us attending worship services. We like people to understand the things that I've done, my hard work, and the things that I do for a living, or whatever the situation may be. We like it when all eyes are on us. And there's a lot of people who say, well, that's just not true. I hate being in the spotlight. But for some reason, everybody has a little selfish side to them. And our hearts are a little selfish every once in a while. This morning, I want to look at a story in Luke chapter 18. And it kind of compares and contrasts the two different kinds of hearts that we could have. And I want to look at some applications about what how we should act on a daily basis, but more importantly, what this life is really about. Is it about the things that we want and we expect out of life, or is it about living and serving God? And I think we all know the answer to that, but yet for some reason it's hard to give up ourselves and to give up our wants and to take the eyes off of us and put the attention and focus on God. Let's go ahead and read this story in the book of Luke, chapter 18, starting in verse 9. It says, "Also he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, 'God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess.' The tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, 'God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted.'" You know, the first question I want to ask ourselves this morning, and it might sound like a very simple question, but I think it drives the point and the focus of the story, is who is Jesus speaking to? Because most oftentimes when you hear a lesson or you hear a Bible class on this particular set of passages or verses, the preacher or the Bible class teacher always focuses on the prayers. And we will do that in just a second, but I think the wrong message is often given when teaching this passage, where we use this passage as, here's how to pray, here's how not to pray. And we kind of take these two prayers and say, here's the things we should pray for, and here's some things we should stay away from. But I want to suggest to you this morning that that was not Jesus' purpose in writing, in telling this parable to these people. There are other times in scriptures where, you know, and like the apostles said, "Lord, teach us to pray." And he taught his apostles how to pray or what to pray for. And I do think there's some application on prayer in these verses, but that was not the point of what Jesus was trying to get across here to his listeners. Listen to who he's speaking to. In verse 9 it says, "Some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and they despised others." Which tells me this was not a lesson on prayer. If Jesus is speaking to these people, he was speaking to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous. The selfishness, the self-righteous, and then they despised others. Really, who he's talking to here are the Pharisees. And he even tells a story about a Pharisee. But this was not a lesson on prayer. This was a lesson that was much deeper than what to pray and what not to pray. This was a lesson that was directed at the heart. This was a lesson on humility, on penitence, and on mercy and on grace. Jesus was speaking to people who were arrogant, people who were trying to be someone they weren't, people who were trying to raise themselves above the bar to say, "Look at me. Look at how great I am. Look at how righteous I am. And if you're not like me, then we despise you." Those are the people that Jesus is targeting this message to. And so he tells this story about two men. You have a Pharisee and you have a tax collector. Two opposite ends of the spectrum in the New Testament world. The Pharisees, they were just as good as it can get. They were well known by everybody. Typically by the way they dressed, by the way they acted, and who they were well respected by everybody because those were the Pharisees. They were well versed in the scriptures, and you respected people that were well versed in the scriptures, people of authority in the religious world. They were the spiritual leaders of their day. And really, as one commentator put it, he said they were the cream of the crop of ancient society. And that's just how the Pharisees were viewed. And then on the other hand, you have a tax collector. And he was also well known. But he was well known for many different reasons than the Pharisee. where the Pharisee was well known because he was respected and well versed in the religious authority of the day, the tax collector was well known because he was the guy that would come around every so often and take your money. And the tax collectors, they worked for the Roman government, and the Roman government said, you owe us this much tax. But the tax collectors would raise that tax up a little bit. And when they came to your house, they said, I know that Rome says you owe this much, but I'm telling you, you owe a little bit more. And what they would do, they would pocket the difference. And so these people were well known. They were just well known for a different reason. They weren't respected because they were swindlers. They stole your money, and there's nothing you could do about it. They were not even accepted by their own people. In fact, as one commentator put it, there was such hatred for tax collectors that they were often put into the same group as the prostitutes. That's how much hatred was for tax collectors. And here Jesus is speaking to these self-righteous people, the Pharisees, the people who were viewed as the cream of the crop. And he says, a Pharisee and a tax collector, these two very different men, they went up to the temple to pray one day. And just like there's two different men, there's two completely different prayers. Look at what the Pharisee did in verse 11. It says, he stood and he prayed thus with himself. To me, this is one of the most important passages or the most important verses in this story. That the attitude behind his prayer was about himself. We typically define prayer as what? Talking with God. Having a conversation with God. Being able to communicate with God directly through the avenue of prayer. But when this Pharisee prayed, he was not praying with God. Jesus says he stood and he prayed thus with himself. This man had such a diluted sense of prayer and what prayer was. Instead of communicating with God, instead of talking to God, now one could argue he was talking to God. But he was not talking with God. I'll never forget growing up, there were times when my dad had to sit me down and teach me a lesson. And there were times, probably around my teenage years, and so some of you I'm sure can, you know, attest to this fact as well. Around the time of my teenage years, as my dad would start talking to me, a blank look would come across my face. And there was times where he would stop his lecture and he would say, am I talking to you or am I talking with you here? Because there's a difference. When you're talking with somebody, there's a conversation. That my dad would talk to me and I would be listening and I could respond back. But if my dad was talking to me, he would say, sometimes I feel like I'm talking to a blank wall. How many of you have used that to your teenagers before? I see some teenagers smiling, so I'm sure it's been used before. But here, when I look at this Pharisee, I see him talking to God. He wants God to listen to him. But he doesn't really care if God listens. Because what he cared about was talking with himself. He was more focused on himself. And if that wasn't evident by what Jesus said here, that he was praying with himself, he prayed what I call the I prayer. He had three different I statements. He said, Lord, I am thankful I am not like other men. I am thankful I'm not like adulterers, extortioners. I'm thankful I'm not like this tax collector here. Because those tax collectors, man, they are just horrible, horrible people. The second I, and the third I, he said, I fast twice a week, Lord. Look at me. Fasting was only really commanded once a year for the Jewish people. And yet this Pharisee wanted God, and we could argue not just God, but everyone else listening. He wanted everyone to know and God to know that he not only fasted once a year, I do this twice a week. I do this more than you expect, God. Look at how great I am. I not only fast twice a week, I give tithes of everything I possess. Look at how great I am, Lord. Look at all the things I've done for you, Lord. Look at me, God. Aren't I great? But then you go to this tax collector, this horrible, no good tax collector, this sinful tax collector. And Jesus describes his prayer in a couple ways. He said, first off, he stood afar off. This prayer was not about him. He didn't care who saw him. He didn't care who recognized him. He was not wanting to be seen. He stood afar off. He wasn't in the middle of the temple or the temple yard. He wasn't in the middle of everything. He stood by himself. And not only did he stand by himself, he wouldn't even raise his eyes to heaven. You know, a lot of people, when we pray today, and I did say there are some applications of prayer in this story. When we pray today, what do? We close our eyes and bow our heads. A lot of people have no idea what that means. We just do it because that's what we did as children. Our parents told us to fold our hands, close our eyes, and bow our heads. But what this signifies, when he couldn't even lift his eyes to heaven, he was signifying, I'm not even worthy to look in the direction of the person I'm talking to. He wouldn't even raise his eyes to heaven. He was so ashamed of who he was, and who he was talking to was so great that he couldn't even look in that direction. But that's not all. He would sit there and he would beat his breast. Have you ever been in a situation where it's hard to get words out? Maybe the only thing that you could do is to maybe show where it hurts. You can't speak. You're so emotional that you can just point or do some sort of gesture to show somebody. You know, the thing I think of is when you're choking, when you need help, when you're close to death because you can't breathe, we can't speak, what do? We show people, I'm choking, right? I need help. And this man here, I just get this picture of he was so overcome with emotion, he couldn't even look up into heaven to the God he was speaking to. The only thing he can do was show God where it hurts and just beat his breast. And then he could finally mutter the words, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. He was earnestly and fervently asking God for forgiveness. Two completely different men, two completely different lifestyles, two completely different prayers, and as we see, they had two completely different hearts. Where the Pharisee came at his prayer with a very arrogant heart, while the tax collector was very penitent in the way he spoke. The Pharisee wanted God and everybody else around to know how good he really was. The Pharisee wanted God and everyone else around to see all the good things he had done. The Pharisee used prayers as a means of getting public recognition and not for glorifying God as what it's supposed to be. And Jesus even brings this up in Matthew chapter 6. He says, don't be like the Pharisees who stand out on the street corner. Because when they viewed prayer, or when they said prayer, it was all about them. And they wanted to be viewed as the self, or as the righteous and almighty. And the Pharisee's prayer was no different. He was saying, I. But the tax collector, the sinner, the scum of society, his heart was full of penitence. Now, a lot of people hear that word, they're not quite sure what it means. If you're an Indiana Jones fan, you might know what it means. Based on the penitent shall, you know, survive the Ark of the Covenant. But that's Hollywood. What it means to be penitent is feeling or showing sorrow and regret for having done wrong. Another way that we could put it or is a person who repents their sins or wrongdoings and then seeks forgiveness from God. That's exactly what we see in the tax collector here. He didn't try to hide the fact that he was wrong or full of sin. He simply was showing sorrow and regret for what he had done, and then he was asking forgiveness for what he had done. He was simply trying to humble himself so that God could forgive him. And what he wanted was he wanted mercy, not recognition, which was the complete opposite. And you would think that someone who was so well-versed in the Scriptures like the Pharisee would understand that point. Of humbling himself before God, asking for mercy from God instead of making it all about him. We had two very different prayers from these two very different men. And what they did was they opened up their heart and kind of showed us their playbook and why they were praying what they were praying. And this morning, I want to suggest to you a couple things. Because we all know from the story, as Jesus said, that it was the tax collector that went away justified rather than the other. He tells us that those who humble themselves shall be exalted. And so we know from the story, just from the way Jesus tells it and the way we read it, we should be more like the tax collector. We should be more like the penitent and the humble. And so how do we receive a penitent heart? How do we work towards having a penitent heart? I think there's four things that we need to understand from this story in order to work our way towards having a heart of penitence and of mercy and humbleness. The first thing that we learned from this story was it's not about status. Sometimes I think we get so wrapped up in where we are in life, on what's going on in life, on who we are in life, that we lose focus on what's really important. The Pharisee was more concerned about his place in society than his place in the spiritual kingdom. The Pharisee was more concerned about how other people viewed him instead of how God viewed him. Instead of being thankful for the blessings God had given him, instead of saying a prayer with something like, I am thankful that I have possessions to where I can tithe. I am thankful that you have given me enough food to where I can fast twice a week. Instead of being thankful for the blessings God has given him, he was thankful that he was not like other people. In other words, he was saying something like, I know that I'm better than this person. And I'm thankful I'm not like this person. And when I look at this person, boy, they've got it rough. And they are just horrible people. They're annoying. Whatever the situation is. And I'm thankful I am not like that because I know I'm better than that person. And the tax collector understood that although his status in this world was at the bottom of society's totem pole, his status with God was still salvageable. That he could still have a relationship with God. Think about, just for a moment, the characters in the Bible, the big characters that we read about. The big characters that we strive to be like. That when we ask ourselves, who would I most like to be like in the Scriptures or in the Bible? Were people like Paul and Peter and Moses and David and all these people come to mind. Think about their outlook on the status of the world for just a moment. That very rarely in the Bible do we read about high status members of society. Jesus, the Son of God, was born in a manger and lived as a carpenter. David, now David's one we could say, well, he was a high status member of society. He was king. But he came from tending sheep in a pasture. Moses was also a shepherd before he was called to lead God's people. Peter, Andrew, James, and John were fishermen. Matthew, the apostle, was a tax collector. Paul himself was a Pharisee. You look at the people that we want to be like in Scriptures, they were not concerned about status. They were not concerned about what people thought about them in this world. They were concerned with one thing and one thing only, serving Christ and proclaiming His message or proclaiming God's message. It's not about status. It's not about how many people we know. It's not about who knows us. It's about loving God and keeping His commandments. It's also not about personal accomplishments. As that Pharisee prayed, he was so proud of himself for the things that he had done. He was so proud of himself for the tithing that he's done, for the fasting that he's done. Now, many of us can look back on our lives and we like talking about our past accomplishments. You can just ask Brooke how many times I bring up certain football games in high school or bring up certain things from college where I said, I'll never forget when I did this or when I won this award or when this happened. We love talking about past accomplishments. We love talking about the glory days, the awards we've won, things we've been able to do, people we've helped. We love bringing up our accomplishments. And really, truthfully, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with thinking about the past and wanting personal accomplishments. But when you look at the Pharisee was only concerned with what he's been able to accomplish, his tithes, his fasting. He was so concerned about what he has done and not about anything else. And the tax collector was the complete opposite. Tax collector was only concerned with one accomplishment, God's forgiveness. tax collectors, while they were kind of the low men on the totem pole, they had a little bit of money. I don't think they were by any means the rich of society, but they had money because they stole it from others. It would have been very easy for the tax collector to say things like, I'm thankful for all the money I have, Lord. I'm thankful for what I'm able to do with my money, what I'm able to do in society. I'm thankful for working for the Roman government, because without the Roman government, I wouldn't have the money that I have and the things that I have in this world and the accomplishments that I have. But the tax collector could care less about personal accomplishments. He was concerned about God's forgiveness. Which takes me to the next point. It's not about status. It's not about personal accomplishment. Really, what we see is it's not about ourselves. If we go through life having the mentality of, it's all about me, then we have lost our focus on the true importance of what it means to be a child of God. I've said this before, and I think it just illustrates perfectly kind of what's going on in this world. The generation that I've grown up in and that I'm still in now, we're known as the me generation, where everything is about us. We love the attention on us. That if we want something, we want it now. Kind of like Veruca Salt from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. We expect it, and we expect it when we want it. If pizza takes longer than 20 minutes to deliver, we expect it to be free. If someone messes up our order and it's not my way, I expect it to be free. I expect something to be done about it. Whatever I want is now at a click of a button on our phones or on our iPads and our tablets. We have grown up in a world, my generation has grown up in a world where we expect, and it's all about ourselves. I found this quote, and it's kind of humorous, but I think it resembles exactly what we're talking about here. It says, if we go through life thinking I, then you won't go very high when you die. And that's absolutely right. If we go through life thinking about I, we won't go very high when we die. Which means our goal is heaven. It's where we all want to be. But if we've been focusing on ourselves this whole time, we've lost focus on what it really means to live in God's world and in God's kingdom. And what we see is it's all about our relationship with God. That's what the tax collector understood, that the only thing standing in the way of his relationship with God was his own personal shortcomings, was his own sinful acts and his own sinful heart. And so instead of patting his ego and making himself look more mighty than he really was, he simply asked God to be merciful to him, a sinner. And his relationship with God was more important than his status or his personal accomplishments and even himself. In verse 14 of that same story, Jesus says there, after the story was said, he says, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. Everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. He who humbles himself will be exalted. The tax collector went home justified. The Greek word that means justified, as we translate justified, can also translate or has the deeper meaning of the act of removing guilt. So when it says that he went down to his house justified, after that prayer that was God-centered and not self-centered, he was able to go home feeling like the guilt of his sin had been lifted away because he focused on God and not himself. He was able to humble himself before God. He was able to admit his guilt and that he wasn't trying to be somebody he wasn't. And this is a theme found throughout all of Scripture, that when we can humble ourselves, when we can have that penitent attitude to humble our hearts before God, he will exalt us. But those who exalt themselves will be humble. James says, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord and he will lift you up. That's exactly what we need to learn how to do. You know, in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, there was five kids. Five kids going through a test, and as you know from the story and the movie, that the winner of the little test in the competition would inherit the entire chocolate factory. Four kids were kind of swept off by their own wants and their own desires. Charlie was not. However, Charlie didn't inherit the chocolate factory because he still stole the fizzy lifting drink. But you know what? At the end of the movie, I never really understood this until I got older. On his own accord, he went back to Willy Wonka, returned the everlasting gobstopper in a way of showing, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for the things that I have done wrong. And in turn, he inherits and he wins the competition. He passes the test and he gets the chocolate factory. I wonder how many of us go through life thinking it's all about me, it's all about what I want, it's all about all eyes on me. I know I'm guilty of this more than the next person. How many of us are willing to go to God in prayer and simply ask Him for forgiveness because we know we're sinners? To not worry about the things of this life and the status of this life because we're worried about one thing, and that's our relationship with God and getting to heaven. How many of us get so tied up and so bogged down with the things of this world, with the schools we pick, the parties we throw, the friends in our lives, how many people we know, how many people know us, and we lose focus on the relationship that's most important, the relationship with God? Because after all is said and done here, I read these verses at the manor this morning, there is coming a time where Jesus says, "Not every one of you who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but those who do the will of my Father in heaven." We can pretend all we want to be followers of God. But when we keep our focus on ourselves and we lose focus on God, we're only pretending, just like the Pharisee. But it's those who do the will of the Father that will find themselves in the loving embrace of God for all eternity. If you're here this morning and you're ready to humble yourself, there's no better way to humble ourselves than to tell God we are sinners and we need forgiveness. There's no other way as outlined in the Scriptures to get that forgiveness and to be baptized in the waters of baptism. To have your sins washed away, to be buried with Christ and raised up again with Him in a new life. If you want to have that penitent heart, start today. Ask for forgiveness. Start living your life for Christ. If there's anything we can do for you this morning, come forward as we stand and as we sing.